Entrepreneur is a French word that means had an idea, did it, right? So it's the did it part that is the key. There are so many people out there that have a great idea and then watch with frustration as someone else does it. Do it now, right? If you can make that a personal habit, do it now. It sounds trite, but it just means don't be a procrastinator. If it's important, do it, right? Don't sabotage yourself with all of the reasons not to.
What's up, everyone? This is Ankit from Fourspreneur.com, and you're listening to the Fourspreneur podcast. On this show, I talk to founders of profitable Salesforce companies and try to get a sense of what it is to be an entrepreneur in Salesforce Cosmos. How did it all start, and how was the journey until now? How do they make decisions both in professional and personal life? Our goal here is to learn from their examples so that the rest of us can go on and build our own profitable Salesforce businesses. To be honest, I couldn't have asked for a better guest to round off the Solopreneur series. My guest today quit his high-paying marketing job to become a Salesforce developer. And not only is he doing freelance consulting, but he also single-handedly published an app on the AppExchange, which is doing well enough to pay his mortgage. Besides this, he also started the Little Trailblazers book club to read short stories to children during the COVID times. You can easily feel the Californian free spirit in his voice. He's the founder and CEO of Proton Group. Hello, Pat. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here, Ankit.
Right. So the pleasure is all ours. So I see that you have a long history of working. You are very experienced. So can you just quickly condense it down? What were you doing before Salesforce? And then how did you come up into the Salesforce world?
Sure. I'll try to keep it brief, but I'm old. So I've got some experience.
Experienced.
I'm experienced. That's right. So I went to undergrad and got a film degree. And my first job out of college, I was working for a corporation, an international healthcare corporation, as a video producer. And I stayed there as a decade producing training and marketing videos. And I went to business school at night and got my MBA. Thank you very much to my employer for paying for all of that. And then I went into business for myself producing multimedia. This was the early days of multimedia in the early 90s, pre-internet even. I was producing corporate training, CD-ROMs, so computer-based training and that sort of thing. And ended up being hired by an agency to write a game for Disney World, or actually for Disneyland. I was working on a macromedia platform called Director, and
right.
created a game. And then they hired me. This marketing agency hired me. Went from contractor to full-time employee. Fast forward to 2004, so about 6 years later, and I was managing director of the San Francisco office of this agency. And a couple years later, they added LA. So I was running the West Coast for a global marketing agency and ended up as a marketing executive in events marketing until 2017, really. And I had gotten to the point where I didn't get to make anything anymore, and I missed that. And so I quit my job and got on Trailhead and started my Salesforce journey.
Wow, you make it sound like piece of cake. I quit my job and then I just moved. So you are a maker. You like to build stuff.
I am. As a developer, I'm a maker. I'm a serial acquirer of specialized skills. So what I'm making is an app, and the skills that I need to acquire might be understanding a queueable Apex or integrating an external API or understanding the customer's needs and wants. And that's one that's really important even for developers. As an entrepreneur, what you're making or creating is value. You have to acquire a specialized set of skills that include a lot of things beyond technology. Sure, you have to be able to build a Salesforce solution, but you also have to be able to talk about the value you've created. What makes you and your company different? How can you define your specialty in a way that positions you as best in that realm? And that's branding. That's your message.
Right. Right. But I think this, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say brand is, that's branding, but brand is a living thing. So it's always evolving and adapting. And as they say in startups, it's pivoting, right? So you're always having to redefine what is your brand.
Exactly. That's very good. So I would say having that experience of working as a marketing head or head of a marketing department helps you build that brand, because this is young entrepreneurs like myself suffer, how to build that brand around you or how to raise that awareness. Like this is something that I'm also offering in my one-on-one freelance coaching that I'm offering. I said, no two people are the same. So that's why I moved away from video course. And what I'm trying is I want to have one-on-one conversation with people, figure out what is their niche, what makes them happy, because freelancing is, if you're just offering developer solution, like, you know, I can outsource work to India or some other place. If somebody hires me a freelancer, they hire me for a reason. What do I bring to the table? You know, and every time I'm writing an Apex class, I'm always thinking, what can I put special in it? Like, what can be the twist this time? I mean, sure, there's only so many ways you can write an HTTP thing. So I think that raising brand and awareness, and this is quite... this is quite visible from the fact that Proton Group, your company, is like less than 3 years old or around 3 years old as per LinkedIn, but you have already kind of created that buzz around you. So tell us a little more about how did you got started in Salesforce? When did you? And one more thing, you said quite easily, I just quit my job and jumped the ship. This is not as easy decision. You just sound like, yeah, okay, I woke up and I was like, you know what? I quit. I mean, tell us a little more also to other people who think about going into the entrepreneurship. What I can see from you is, or what I hear from you is, you had that confidence in you that, okay, I am confident that I will get something. You know, a lot of times people who want to jump the ship, they think they're not enough, or they... In my bathroom, there hangs a picture which says, if you don't try, you won't know. But to make that shift, you know, so tell us a little, tell young people sure. about how did you make that decision? I don't think it was overnight, right?
Right. Well, I mean, there had been growing sort of dissatisfaction that I was an executive. And I mean, after a while, the corporate world gets to anybody, you know.
I get you.
And at a certain point, especially by the time you reach, you know, I'm 58 years old. I was 55 when I left my job. And by that point in your career, you realize you better be building something for yourself for the future, right? No matter how much, you know, you've squirreled away, at some point you're going to say, if I quit working, my salary stops, right? And then what? And so I was thinking about the future. And so you're right. It is sort of flippant just to say, so I quit my job and I started this. It does require two things. It requires, well, I'll say three. Number one, it requires a wife who will, or a spouse who will support you in that.
Amen.
Right?
And, a partner. And
that's right, a partner, whoever that is. And the second of two things is the confidence to do that. And, you know, in the early 90s, when I left my first job, I was in business for myself as a multimedia producer. And the first year in that business, I made twice as much as I ever had working at a corporation. And once you've worked for yourself, once you've worked for yourself successfully, you realize you're never going to be unemployed again. If you don't have a job, you're just self-employed between clients, right? And so, it's a much different feeling. So I had that in my experience. And then I had worked for 33 years and I'm a good saver, right? So I had built up the financial reserves that I needed. I knew that I could live for 18 months on my savings with no problem. And so that sort of gave me a ticking clock to be able to start generating revenue again. And so I wasted no time. I took my very first module on Trailhead on the last day of May 2017. And I had my app on the App Exchange 15 months later, but by the end of August.
So tell us a little more about the Proton 7 app and what does it do and what's so special about it?
Sure. So Proton 7 Group is my company name. The app is called Proton Text. It is an SMS lightning component, and it covers three areas of basically the three use cases of SMS in Salesforce: one-to-one messaging, automated texting, and blasts. Okay, so those three are three capabilities, and in particular, the smooth transition from one to the other in there is important for creating a seamless customer experience if your business is texting to your customers, to leads, to volunteers, to students, whoever it is. So for example, you can do a blast to 10,000 people. When they respond, they get an automated and personalized response that uses their name based on their phone number. And then if they reply to that, then that conversation can be forwarded to the sales rep that owns the lead, or a customer service rep, or whoever, based on the content of the message. And so that sort of seamless transition in the course of, you know, three text exchanges is where I really have focused all of my efforts for my app Proton Text.
Right. So tell me a little more about, so I think it's a one-stop shop, a one-person company, so it's just you who's running it right now?
It is just me. So in, you know, my experience in the marketing agency, I managed a $100 million P&L. I had 40 people reporting to me. I've had that experience of running a big group. And it's really exciting and fun when you're in it and doing it. At this point in my career, I'm looking to lifestyle, right? I'm not looking to build a company to a huge size that I can sell off to someone. I'm not looking for investors that I have to be accountable to. I'm looking for a lifestyle where I get to work at home, at my office. I get to work the hours I want to work. I get to have contact with my customers. I get to really focus on the kinds of activities, daily activities that are enjoyable to me. That and I'm building something that is not dependent. I'm building a revenue stream that is not dependent on the number of hours that I work, okay? When you're working for an hourly wage, that can be very rewarding until you stop working, and then that wage stops. And so either you need to be building something. Either you're building a company that you can sell, and that becomes your retirement, or a company that you can staff and then kind of walk away from, and they will keep running and running the company and generating revenue for the founder, or you build an app that you can put in and basically get monthly income from all of your customers on an ongoing basis. So, you know, I'm doing a combination of that right now. Building an app and getting it on AppExchange is not the golden ticket. It does not guarantee revenue. You have to market it. You have to sell it. You have to support it. But it is an ever-growing, ongoing monthly recurring revenue for me. And, you know, that's sort of the base that's building. And meanwhile, I'm doing hourly consulting just like, you know.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that was my follow-up question. So I know from a fact, so my first ever Salesforce job as a student was to make an app for the App Exchange back in 2011. So I was a student and I took a break before I started my PhD. We launched the app. I learned that B2B sales is not like B2C sales. So I learned a lot. So I know from where you're coming from. And that's why I have a bunch of more interesting questions. So first, as an ISV, so I know some people in the ISV world here in Germany, especially the head of Munich, Christian Sandor Knapp, my brother. Me and him had the discussion, can ISVs survive just by being ISVs? So I know Amnon is also doing it. I also record, you know, Amnon Kruvi, he's doing Kruvi Solutions. He's providing a scheduling solution. So he has an app and that helps you with sales scheduling in Salesforce. And the ISV that my friend here in München is running, they also have a consulting arm, you know, so they're also doing consulting. Can ISV survive, and especially with the 30% cut that Salesforce is taking, right? I mean, it's 30 or, yeah. So can you purely survive just being an ISV and just having an app?
Well, for starters, actually, on my app, it's 15%. It's not 30. I think it used to be 30. They brought that down for at least the level
Are
of
you at
buyer.
a good negotiator?
No. I am a little fish. There was no negotiation. There was a sign this contract and you're in, and that's it. You know.
Oh.
there was no negotiation. It's just they. I think they got pushed back from the community, and so it's a lower rate now. So it's not quite the highway robbery that it might have seemed at one point.
I will tell this to Amnon because we just recorded last month and he told me it's like around 25-30, so I'm sure he would like this episode. Well, go ahead.
So at any rate, I think it's possible. It depends on how good you are at marketing, what your goals are. Basically, how fast can you build your monthly revenue, and what is the cost of acquiring a customer? You know, there's kind of two levels of ISV. There are those that are creating an app on around the Salesforce platform and selling it to customers that don't have Salesforce yet, right? And so they're in there selling that to companies for, you know, $200 a month for their users, and then they pay the platform fee to Salesforce. Salesforce loves those kind of partners because they're bringing them customers that they wouldn't otherwise have gotten. My situation, I wasn't thinking that way. When I was learning the platform, I thought, wait, where's the texting part of this? I just was missing. There were some texting apps out there, but they were really built for Classic. They had, you know, applied the SLDS styling so they looked like Lightning, but they were still Classic in the sense that to use them, you had to leave your sales app and go over to their app to do the texting. And that was just, that did not make sense at all. So I wanted the messenger from my phone on the screen on every page that I was on, and I wanted to connect those conversations to records, and so I built it. But my customer base have to be on Salesforce already, right?
Right. But is being an ISV profitable?
It is. The question is, I mean, profit is a measure of your revenue versus your expenses, right? So as a solo person, I've got very low expenses. I'm not paying a developer. I'm not paying a marketing person. I've got to do all of that myself. So yes, it can be profitable. It is an investment, and it's not going to be profitable right away. It's going to build, right? So if I look at my revenues right now, they are 10 times what they were this time last year. So I like my growth curve. On the other hand, I couldn't pay my rent. So, you know, without the consulting. So, you know, I think it's a balance.
Right. So you are doing consulting on the side too. And is your Salesforce experience just 3 years, or did you have experience on the platform before?
No. Well, I mean, I had been in the marketing agencies, I had been in two different marketing agencies and both use Salesforce. But both use Salesforce badly, I have to say. They were using.
Are you consulting them now?
No. I had enough of that industry.
Okay, fair enough. So then comes the $1,000 question: why Salesforce? Like, you could, if you are a builder, you could have done something in anything or video. Like, that's your background. Why Salesforce?
So for me, when I was thinking about development, I thought, all right, which. The two obvious for me were AWS or Salesforce. And AWS really, really felt more like an IT job. It did not feel to me like being a developer on AWS would be something that I would be interacting with customers and thinking about their customer needs and their processes and all of that. So Salesforce was a good place for me to be able to use my domain experience. I know how an office runs. I know how people are trying to sell to customers. I went on hundreds of pitches to customers. I put together proposals. I did all of the things that so many people that are using Salesforce need to do every day. So I understand those processes. And so it felt like a good place. The other thing was, you know, I was based in San Francisco. There's no way not to know about Salesforce. Salesforce had been my customer, so had AWS. I'd been working on projects with both of them. And, you know, when I went to their conferences, I looked around and I saw the developers going into sessions and thinking, I'd rather be there. You know, I'd rather be doing that. And so I did that. And I have to say, Trailhead was really the deciding factor. I could start, you know, the day that I decided to become a Salesforce developer, I earned my first badge. Actually, my first three badges. You know, there was free, easy access to great training, and you know, you just can't beat that.
I agree that Trailhead is an easy way, and it's like that your first hook of crack, like it's a little bit like that. You get used to it, and then, you know, it's like that first thing that you get, and then and then you're like, oh, I want more of it, and they've gamified it in a lot of way. All right, so I have two questions coming back to that we were talking about the revenue. So you are doing consulting. Can you share a little bit of numbers, how your app revenue is like, and like, how is it growing? So the people get the idea if the juice is worth the squeeze, you know?
Sure, sure. So I have monthly recurring revenue let me put it in terms of, rather than specific numbers, let me put it this way. My monthly recurring revenue would cover about half of my mortgage.
Okay.
So, you know, it's okay. And it's growing. As I mentioned, it's 10 times now what it was a year ago.
Okay, fair enough.
So you know, it's not enough that I would be saving for retirement. It's not enough that I would be able to send my kid to college on, but it's certainly helping out. It is definitely noticeable and growing.
Right. And that's like, you are playing the long game. So it's looked like it's coming, and you know, you are experienced, and you know, it's always about the long game. And you know, you're looking at a 5-year horizon, and then it's kind of paying for your Hawaii vacation.
Exactly. And so, you know, so I see it growing. I think by this time next year, it'll be covering my mortgage and my property taxes. And, you know, eventually, by the time I retire in, you know, 10 years or whatever, it will be a nice, steady base of income for me. The consulting, of course, will all of the revenue from consulting will stop the day that I stop doing that. But in the meantime, right, you know, that's, you know, I can work 30 or 40 hours a week at a good consulting rate. And that's a good living for most people, you know?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, no, absolutely right. So how do you split your time between developing the app and consulting? Because, or have you already built the app? And how long did it take from ideation to the security?
Sure,
check?
Security review. Yeah, so you know. I think I started building the app. I started learning Salesforce the last day of May 2017. I started building the app on Thanksgiving vacation, so end of November of that same year. So about five and a half months later, I started building the app. I was building the app not with AppExchange in mind. I started building the app to prove that I could, because having earned three certifications in 5 months, I had recruiters that called me and said, hey, let me put you up for some jobs. Send me your resume. I sent the resume and the guy said, look, I can get you a job as a chief marketing officer, but not as a developer, because you've got nothing on your resume. And so I felt I had to create my own experience. And the best way to do that was, let's build an app that everybody can understand what it does and why people would use it. Let's build an app that requires integrating with an external API, because that's complicated. Let's build an app that, you know, shows off my skill and understanding of Lightning. And so that's what I started building. And by February, I was having so much fun with it, I thought, I'm just going to take this all the way. And so I submitted it for security review in June. I had most of it built by then. After it went into security review, this was my first time through security review, and it took me five times through. You know, they would kick it back and say, no, you didn't do this.
Five times is a charm.
Yeah, well, you know, I had never done it before. I didn't know that, you know, if you just put all your SQL in a utility class, you can just change it in one place instead of everywhere. So, you know, I learned a lot. I would write that app differently now, but I'm not going back and changing it, because it works and it's solid. So anyway, I got it through security review by end of August and started selling it in September. I got my first customer in about a week, and they're still a customer. And from every customer on, every time I did an implementation, they would say, you know, it would be great if it could do this or that. And because I'm a one-person shop, in most cases, if it seemed like a feature that would add value to everybody, I would add it, and I would add it within a day and push out the changes. And that just blew my customers away, right? That's something that my competitors with a staff of 100 engineers, they can't They can't turn around a patch or a new feature in a week. There's just too much to review. And so I really, that first 6 months or so, I really improved the app a lot. Then, so that the first version of it did one-to-one messaging and automated texting. During that 6 months, I also built, so the way the automation works is through invocable Apex and platform events. So, which allow you to build flows and processes that can receive and interpret text and can send out text whenever you want. And so I built, in that 6 months, I continued building a library, an automation library of open source automation. You can download it as unmanaged packages. So that, and then then I went into another period of about 6 months where I was developing the blaster, the Proton blaster. And I built that because customers were asking for that blast capability. And I thought, well, if I built it, what would I call it? Well, obviously Proton Blaster, and who doesn't want to build a Proton Blaster, right? So, so I built
Sounds pretty amazing, yeah.
But, but since I launched that last fall, September of 2018, there hasn't been significant development. You know, it's the occasional bug fix or add a feature or that, but it is not, absolutely not full time. In fact, I'm making one update right now, and I looked, and the last time I had a scratch org was about 3 months ago.
All right. So you balance it out, and it was kind of initial, very hardcore 6 to 12 months of development, and now it's just like creaming. And two things I want to say that you said was, one, that you went from a CMO to developer. I think it takes a lot of guts, for not using the better word, to say that, you know, I want to go one level down to what I'm used to, you know, so I hats off to you for that. And second, this, that you have no red tape, like that's why I like to work as a, you know, that's what I told you before, when I come consulting for a client, I like to work as a one-stop shop. I am the admin, I am the BA, I am the developer. So if something needs to be done, I need to be in a conference call with myself or with the client. And if we agree, we go with it. So that's one of the benefits of not having a team, where if you think I want to do it, you do it. You don't create or maybe you create a ticket for it, but you're like, I know what I want. Go in, hack it out, comment it, done.
That's right. Absolutely.
Hello, dear listeners. I wish you all a happy new year 2021. You know, 2020 was a really crazy year, so I hope 2021 turns out to be different, and I hope all your goals and wishes and your dreams come true. Now, if one of your goals is to go ahead and become a solopreneur, then I can help you with that. So I created a course called Salesforce Solopreneur, the Modern Day Freelancer. And in this course, I try to give you all the information that you need in order to become a successful solopreneur. Being a freelancer is not about just having technical skills, but also about having a unique brand. And this is where we start. I go ahead and help you identify what can be your Salesforce brand. Then we go ahead and establish this brand. And then I also talk about how to market yourself, or how to market and build your identity in the ecosystem. Once all this is done, then you will start getting customers. And then I show you how to go ahead and manage those customers. Last but not the least, I go ahead and share some best practices. Now, these are basically mistakes that I've done, so I go ahead and share them so that you can learn from them and you don't have to repeat them and avoid those mistakes. So go ahead, check out learn.forspreneur.com. Check out the course. There are free videos for every module. You can watch it for free. And use the code FP10 to get a 10% discount. That's FP for Forspreneur 10. And now, enjoy the episode. So I think you're rocking the solopreneur boat quite well. I mean, you have your app there, you're doing your consulting, and as this is like an episode for the solopreneurs. So tell us a little more about the brand building. And one thing I personally know from other solopreneurs, you don't manage it alone yet. Like, you still have a tax guy and somebody doing it for you, or are you like also taking care of those stuff? Tell someone, if someone wants to be a solopreneur, what are the things, what are the support mechanisms that you have in place so that you can go and do the thing that you want to do?
Sure. So, you know, we talked earlier about being a maker and acquiring a serial set of skills. Well, as an entrepreneur, you have to acquire those for a successful business. They don't all have to be your skills, right? So you can partner with someone, you can hire someone. In my case, I'm good at what I refer to as the administrivia. I'm good at handling like legal, financial, invoicing, taxes, that kind of stuff. I actually do myself. I don't necessarily recommend it, but it's something that, you know, I've always been interested in financial planning, and I've done my own taxes always. And so, you know, I've gotten good at that, and I don't mind doing it. So if that's not your personality, be aware that's an absolute need for your business. I've known people who were so successful as freelancers, so successful and so busy that they didn't have time to invoice and they went bankrupt. Right. Just because they did not have the time and the discipline. Well, they had the time. They just didn't have the discipline to send out the invoices and get paid. And once that invoice is out there and goes unpaid for 4 weeks or 6 weeks or 8 weeks, follow up. And you have to assert yourself and push and get paid for the things that you do. We talked about brand development, but that's brand development. That's not marketing. You have to get that word out there. That's a skill set in itself. Obviously, that's one that I had from my background, so I do that myself. But I know an awful lot of brilliant developers who have a great idea for an app, but don't really have the comfort level of going out there and talking about it. So partner up with someone. Find someone who's great at talking and not so great at coding. Good. Right? Pair up with them. So, you know, it's a complementary set of skills. If you look at most great startups, it's not one person. It's a team. And in fact, a lot of these incubators, startup incubators, they won't take you on if you don't have two or three people on the founding team.
Right. Absolutely. So exactly, for my recent startup, I mean, I was a CTO of a startup before. It failed spectacularly, but I learned a lot. And this time I was like, I'm not going to do that, because building something technically good and selling are totally different ball games. So coming back again to that brand building, so you cannot just quit your job tomorrow and say, oh, I'm going to be, you know, a freelancer or a solopreneur. Like, you need to plan 3 to 6 months in advance. You need to start a blog, a website, get your name out there, get a feel of what is missing. So if somebody wants to, let's say, move from full-time to solopreneurship, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, okay. So whatever your situation and whatever your dream, here's the way that I think about it, right? There are a lot of people, I've used this quote over and over. Entrepreneur is a French word that means had an idea, did it, right? So it's the did it part that is the key. There are so many people out there that have a great idea and then watch with frustration as someone else does it. And says, oh, I could have done that. I could have been rich by now. I had the idea for Facebook before Zuckerberg, but you know what? He did it. If you have a dream, write it down. Okay, that's step one. Step two is put a date on it, and now you have transferred that dream to a goal, right? And if you're familiar with the management strategy or the management discipline that Salesforce uses, it's called the V2 MOM, vision, values, and then MOM. It's methods, obstacles, and metrics, right? So when you have that dream, write it down, put a date on it, figure out what is stopping me from doing this. And it might be your 40 or 60 hour a week job that's stopping you from doing it. And so once you've identified that obstacle, then you say, what am I going to do about it? What am I going to do about it?
Right.
If I had 20 hours a week that I could devote to this, I could get this app built in 6 months, right? So where do you find 20 hours a week? Well, stop gaming. Stop going out to bars. Stop watching TV. When I was working 50 hours a week and earning my MBA, I did not watch TV for 4 years.
Right. It's an idiot box.
It's just a matter of what are you willing to give up for something that is going to fulfill your life's dream. It's discipline. There's a saying that comes back to me all the time, and that it comes from a book on positive mental attitude that came out, I think, in the 60s or 70s, a guy named W. Clement Stone. And the one thing out of that book that I remember is, do it now. Right?
Right.
If you can make that a personal habit, do it now. It sounds trite, but it just means don't be a procrastinator. If it's important, do it, right? Don't sabotage yourself with all of the reasons not to.
Right. In my gym, in the toilet, there's a sticker which says, if it's important to you, you will make time for it.
That's right. In today's world, the way that I find time to do things, like if I think it's important that I read blogs more, right? If I've got a list of those, I put it on my calendar.
Right.
I don't let something else on my calendar get in the way of it. Put it on your calendar. Make it a priority.
And the episode 3 of this podcast is with Andrea Terrell. And she also said, just do it. If you really, that's the title of the episode, is just do it. So what you said, do it now. You know, you can say do it now or just do it. Basically, if you have the idea, do it, not sit and have the idea and think about it. If you have it in you, do it.
And I think, you know, just do it is great. Do it now means it's the same thing about adding the date to your dream. Turn it into a goal. Give yourself something to which you can be accountable.
All right. So is being a solopreneur fruitful? Would you say that this is something that you would recommend? And the second question is, this is something that I have, and I definitely want to ask you this because you experienced. If everybody decides they want to be an entrepreneur, who will do the job? Like if everybody today says, I'm going to start something on my own, who would do a job?
I don't know. I have confidence that not everyone can be an entrepreneur, right? I know I have met so many brilliant developers who aspire, you know, they think they've had a great idea for an app. And so they come to me for advice. How do you get an app on AppExchange? Well, that part is fairly straightforward. The real question you need to be asking is, how are you going to run a business?
Right, absolutely.
Right? There's so much more to being an entrepreneur in any ecosystem, Salesforce or otherwise, that you just have to be able to run a business. And is that a lifestyle that you're going to be happy with?
All right, fair enough. Like slowly we are coming to the end of the episode. What have been your top 3 challenges of running a Salesforce business?
I think one of the challenges that most solopreneurs will face is that if you are truly solo, if I'm coding today, I'm not marketing. And if I'm marketing today, I'm not coding. And so you're going to have to figure out what your priorities are, not just what is important, what is urgent. And so, for example, for me, whatever my plans, if I have a customer that calls with an issue, that is my urgent thing to do today until it's resolved. And so, you know, you have to understand customer experience. It's not just branding and marketing. You have to understand, how do I treat my customers? How am I going to respond to them? How am I going to make them understand that they're most important? One of the things I'm most proud of, I'm proud that I built an app and what it can do. I'm most proud that when you go to my AppExchange listing, I've got a dozen or more reviews that all are raving about the customer support they get, about the quality of the app. You know, it's all 5-star reviews. So that I'm very proud of. And you know, if that's not important to you, maybe you shouldn't be an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so that's what I was talking about, building a brand. Like there's also an overhead, like you need to also set aside a little bit of time for that marketing or that brand building. But from what it looks like from you or from your experience, it looks like it has been like a piece of cake for you until now. And like you didn't have many challenges that you faced, or did you face any other, or if it's been a good ride, that's also a very good example. Like I think you planned very good and you were very good in your execution. And maybe that comes with your experience. So
no, my experience as a marketer has made me good at telling a story in a way that seems like everything's perfect. Right?
So, okay.
All right. So yeah. the first big obstacle I faced, and many others do this that enter the Salesforce ecosystem, is I got my certifications. I was a Trailhead Ranger in 5 weeks. I earned 3 certifications in 5 months, And I still couldn't get an interview because I didn't have any Salesforce experience. Whether it's Salesforce or any other world, you can't get experience until someone hires you, and no one will hire you until you have experience. So it's that terrible conundrum. And the only advice I can say is make your own experience. Figure out a way to build something and show your skills, and you have to network. You have to get to know people so that it's not just your resume they're looking at. They have gotten to know you. And luckily, Salesforce has the huge Ohana user groups everywhere. And now, by the way, now that they're all virtual, I've been surfing user groups. This is my marketing. Right. I've attended meetings all over the world, and this is the way people get to know, oh, that pet guy, I know. Oh, yeah, he's got a tech stack. So this is my marketing.
Right. That's how we got into touch, because you were at the Amsterdam user group and Sergi came to me and he was like, you should interview this guy. And I'm definitely not disappointed. So the second last question, normally the last question is about the books, like if you read books and what would you like to share with us or what impact they have. But I also know you have also started a tiny little reading club for kids. So tell me, how did you come about that? Because I think that's very sweet. I don't have kids, but maybe I'll come there because I love children's stories. And
Thank you for helping me get the word out about the Little Trailblazers Book Club. And this started when the quarantine happened. And here in California, they sent all the kids home from school. I have a 7-year-old granddaughter, and our daughter and son-in-law were struggling with, you know, having to suddenly become homeschoolers and understand how to do that. And so I thought I would help out I said, you know, give me 45 minutes a day and I'll read to her. And since I was going to be doing this on Zoom, I thought, well, there's no reason not to add other kids. So I talked to some of my other friends in the Ohana that I knew had kids that were around that age. And we started the book club in March with 5 kids. Now we're up over 15 kids, Monday through Friday from 12:50 to 1:30 in Pacific time. I read books. We're now on our 14th book.
More power to you, man.
You know, I share my screen and it's up on the Kindle and I'm just reading off of there, and so they can read along or just listen. And it is so rewarding. I can't tell you how much fun it is for me to see all these kids every day. So, you know, if anybody's interested, just send me your email and I'll add you to the invitation. If you've got a kid between, our kids right now are 7 to 12. So that age range.
Well, what if I'm a grown-up, but I like the stories and I just want to hear you read?
You're welcome to join too. And by the way, I think that there is sort of a limit on the size of this, because every day I talk to each of the kids. I greet them all by name. I try to make them know that I'm there for them. And so I don't want this to grow huge. What I'd love to see are other people come to me and say, how do I do this? How do I start a book club, you know, for kids that I know? And I'm happy to have that. So... I'd be happy to see this spread. Hopefully the kids will be back in school soon and we won't have to worry so much about it. But until then, I'm reading to them.
Well, I'll tell you what, me and Sergi, we are also book nerds and we share notes, and we have been thinking about starting an Ohana book club for adults, but it's just in a starting phase and it's another side project. And first I'm like, I need a holiday and then I'm going to start something new. Although I've already fleshed out, like I was on a train ride from Berlin to Munich and I had nothing to do. So I just fleshed out the wireframes, like I hand drew all the wireframes and I sent it to Sergi. And he was like, I thought you were on vacation. I was like, I don't know, man. I was on train and I was free and I couldn't get it out of me. So what are your book recommendations for adults now?
Oh, okay. So for adults, the first thing I would say is, if you are not a reader, it doesn't matter. There's podcasts, there are blogs, there are books, there are audiobooks. About half of what I read is on Audible, and that's just as valid. You are consuming the content, and in some cases at a deeper level than if I'm reading it. So be curious. Bring diversity into your reading list, and that's in terms of topics, authors, and viewpoints, right? So I realized a few years ago that while I thought of myself as sort of a diversity-supporting white male, you know, liberal, the fact was my reading list was not very diverse, and so I've really worked at diversifying that a bit. So I read sci-fi, you know, I read sci-fi. Some of my favorites are The Martian by Andy Weir, Seven Eves by Neal Stephenson, Broken Earth, the Broken Earth series by N.K. Jemisin, The Wormwood Trilogy by Tade Thompson, a wonderful Nigerian sci-fi writer, The Three-Body Problem. This is an amazing book by Shixin Liu, a Chinese author, and that's actually a trilogy, although I've only read the first of those. Outside of sci-fi, for pleasure, some of the non-fiction stuff that I love, Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari is life-changing. That's a book that I will probably read again, and I recommend to everybody. The Big Short, or really anything by Michael Lewis. Any of Mary Roach's brilliant and hilarious books about science. She writes about there's one called Stiff. That's a great one to get started on. It's about what happens after you die, right? What do they do with bodies? It's hilarious and interesting and fascinating. So business books, I tend not to read the latest trendy business books. Maybe it was after business school that I just thought I've had enough of that. But I will say, for brand and marketing, which is so important, anything by Seth Godin, right?
So, yeah.
And Seth Godin not only is a master, he knows all about brand and marketing, and he does it for himself. And so you can find him everywhere: YouTube, blogs, articles, podcasts, books. Everything he writes is brilliant, and on target and up to date with how people need to be marketing today. And the other area that I think people really need to think about, especially coming from a technical background, is customer experience. Jeffrey Bean, Matt Watkinson, there are dozens of authors that write about this and customer experience and understanding what that really means. And I'm not talking about CX design. I'm talking about talking with people, understanding what they need and how to make them happy. That's all essential.
Interesting. Well, that's the best answer for this question anybody has given. I'm a book nerd myself, so I love this answer, and I'm definitely going to plate it too for myself. Again, 1.3, the episode, Andrea Terrell, she teaches Seth Godin MBA, so they're kind of like a schooling thingy, and she was doing that, so she was also a good fan of it. All right, last question. What's your favorite productivity habit?
Do it now.
Okay.
It's that easy. Just don't procrastinate.
Sweet. All right. So before we end, I have a surprise rapid fire round for you. So I'm just going to ask you some questions, this or that, and then I hope you answer. So be quick. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
So Windows or Mac?
Both, but I use Mac now.
GUI or CLI?
CLI.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Ebooks or hard copy?
Ebooks.
Are you a morning person or a night person?
Morning.
What's your favorite morning routine? Meditation, yoga, jogging, journaling?
Sitting with my tea, reading my email.
Email? Okay, interesting. If you could beam yourself to any place, where would it be?
1959, Greenwich Village, so I could hear some of the jazz greats.
Interesting. Nice. So I appreciate your music as well.
It's hypothetical, so I thought I'd throw in the time travel as well.
Right. So because that was the next question, if you could had a time machine, would you go to past or future? But we did it already. Which city do you like to travel for business?
Hong Kong.
As a business traveler, which hotel chain is the best value for money?
I don't know. Marriott Courtyard, I guess.
All right. What is the nicest testimonial that someone left for your app?
They're all nice. I don't want to single one out. What is meaningful is when they mention my name and say that I helped them.
All right. Best Dreamforce and why?
The next one.
the
next one in person. Because it'll be so good to see everybody that we've been distant from.
Of course. Last question. Can Google be dethroned?
I hope not. I've got stock.
Fair enough. Thank you, Pat. That was your time. It was really nice talking to you. It was really enlightening. Do you have any closing notes? And how do people get in touch with you?
People can reach me. I'm on Twitter @PatMcClellan_C. I am on LinkedIn. Just search for me. It's easy to find me. I'm happy to connect with you. I'm happy to mentor. So let me know if you've got questions. That I've realized at this stage of my career that some of the best value that I can create is helping others get started. So let me know.
Thank you, Pat. That was really enlightening talking to you. Thank you, Sergi. Shout out to Sergi for this connection. And yeah, hope to see you soon sometime.
Great. It was a pleasure meeting you.